ahead of us the coast of County Derry at McGilligan, the flat, low, distinctive strand that was very important indeed in the mapping of Ireland. And behind us, the Inishowen Peninsula, leaving Donegal, crossing from Greencastle in Donegal into McGilligan, the peninsula at the northwest of Lough Foyle, crossing on the ferry, crosses all summer. And of course, many people will know McGilligan as the site of the prison, McGilligan Jail, where so many Republicans served time in the 1970s. Indeed, it's still an operating prison for male offenders. The British Army had shooting range as well on McGilligan at the height of the Troubles. But a lot of the 79,000 acres on McGilligan Peninsula is now a nature reserve. It was a sign of changed times. But leaving Donegal into Thera Columbkill, Derry unfolds before us. Listening to The County Measure. I'm Vincent Woods. We're making a journey around Ireland, 100 years after independence and partition, to get a measure, to get many measures of all 32 counties. We're looking at place, landscape, and the people who shape their lives within these boundaries of community and county. In this series, I'm hoping to get a fresh understanding of each county and its people as we shape a radio atlas of Ireland. Nothing like an expansive beach on a windy summer day, and it's really beautiful here, the downhill beach, downhill strand on the Causeway coast. Looking west, you see back to Inishowen, Donegal, McGilligan Point we've come from, and then east to Port Stewart, Port Rush, and on to Fairhead, and then perched up on the cliffs over us, the famous Mussenden Temple, built in 1785 by the Earl of Bristol, who was also at the time the Church of Ireland Lord Bishop of Derry. He built it to honour his niece, and of course it's become a famous place for weddings, for expressions of love, for music gigs, administered by the National Trust. And not too far away I see a Mr. Whippy van, and I think I might need to get an ice cream. How are you doing? Who could resist an ice cream here in this spot, in this lovely spot?
Especially downhill, beautiful beach, natural beauty.
What have you got? What have you got?
Strawberry, Nutella, chocolate, Milky Bar, butterscotch, bubblegum. For the bigger child in you. With some marshmallows, maybe.
Not hard to get that out. Yeah.
That's the blues.
I think I'll go for the simple
old. The same simple old 99. Yeah. Hardly a bit old tradition. My name's Shane Carton, Mr. Whippy, NI Doorstep Delivery and Ice Cream Van in the North Coast. Family's been on it for 50 years. My father started it when I was 2 years of age. I'm 52 now, so it's all I've ever known.
It's great though.
First 99 I remember selling was 12p, and it was coming out of Station Road in Port Stewart in a CF Bedford van, and my mother was driving it. It's my proudest moment, I think, in life. But I always remember it, so...
Of course.
It's one of them ones that...
And Shane, did you grow up close to here?
Yeah, I grew up in Corian. And we used to travel from Corian down to Tralee Festival in County Kerry in an ice cream van. And it took us 2 days. We had to sleep in the van at night back in them days. And that's big enough for a tent to sleep on. So you did have a sleep in here and you were sleeping there. So that was life.
Great.
It was life.
Yeah. It's a beautiful, it's my first time on this beach.
Oh, this,
it's a beautiful spot. Can you, on a really clear day, see Scotland?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You would have seen it yesterday. Ah. Here was yesterday, was, oh, crystal clear, beautiful, lovely and warm.
Shane, I think you have more customers.
Pleasure to meet you.
Have a nice day. Enjoy. Yeah. I listen to the program. Brilliant.
Are you going away somewhere? Should we rush or do you care? And are we leaving soon? Did you pack a case for two?
Standing here in Guildhall Square in Derry City, you can't but remember the many key moments of cultural and political history that have happened here. The thousands who gathered in June 2010 to hear the result of the Savile inquiry into Bloody Sunday and the vindication of the innocent. The field day premiere of Brian Friel's great play Translations in the Guildhall in September 1980. Bill Clinton addressing crowds here in 1995. And two other Friel plays, Freedom of the City, set in the mayor's parlour of the Guildhall, and Making History, premiered here too. Well, making history in the mayor's parlour of the Guildhall these days is Lillian Sinoy Barr, the first black mayor elected in any city or district of the six counties of Northern Ireland, SDLP mayor of Derry City and Strabane District Council. And we're here this morning to meet her.
Lovely to meet you. I'm Lillian. This is my office, my new office.
Mayor, it's a pleasure to be here and to meet you. Walking into the Guildhall, I saw the signs for the John Hume Peace Prize exhibition here. And I think a chance encounter with John Hume was part of what forged the way for you.
Oh, absolutely. When I came here in 2010, I went to a supermarket and I saw John Hume, and he was the first person to say, "There is your home now." And I didn't know who he was, I'll be honest about that. And I was really humbled that he would be able to stop me on the streets and says, "Welcome to Derry."
And of course, you'd been involved in social justice action in Kenya, in South Kenya, as a Maasai woman. And some of the negative response to what you were doing is what led you here.
Yeah, I came here because of the work I did in Kenya. I fought for women's rights. Women will struggle with getting to education. There's early forced marriage. There's female genital mutilation. And I strongly believed in women empowerment and women having a voice. It's what guides me, equality and respect for difference.
Derry and Northern Ireland, now multicultural. You formed this group called Northwest Migrants Forum.
When I came here from Kenya, minoritized communities were really struggling. There was an assumption, as a migrant, you have no entitlements. And the community was very isolated, and it didn't matter what skills or knowledge you had, you are all put on one box. So I transferred my skills of fighting for social justice from Kenya and work towards building an inclusive society.
And the offices are pretty close to here. I'd love to maybe just walk to there and have a chat as we go.
Absolutely, it would be my honour.
Hello.
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 Good.
What's the
crack?
Good, what's the crack?
I'll be back shortly.
Okay,
I do know if it is the way I say what's the crack, it's a bit funny. They always laugh when I say that. I got my refugee status in January, the 20th of January 2012, and then the 28th of February, I set up the Northwest Migrants. Hello, stranger! I have to tell you a story about this man.
Hello.
He is Eddie Breslin. He used to be the community relations officer at the Housing Executive, the first man ever who took a risk on myself to support the Northwest Migrants Forum.
Thank you, Donald.
I'm so happy to see you. I'll call you. We will talk. You see,
there
are great people in this city. You are just walking around and everyone wants to stop you to make sure you know that they care. And that is important. We are at the Northwest Migrants Forum now.
Yep.
Going to the third floor. That's where we'll see the magic happening. I can call them, yes. I can call them and ask for an appointment for him.
I'm Gail Gormley, and I am the Integration and Welfare Officer at Northwest Migrants Forum.
What does your day-to-day work involve?
Northwest Migrants Forum is a safe place for any migrant person who is arriving in Derry, whether they are an international student, a refugee, an asylum seeker, an EU migrant, so they can't afford to buy enough food. They also struggle finding clothes, a uniform, and for legal help as well about their asylum claims. So we would refer them to some lawyers. We will be a safe space for people coming from anywhere in the world.
I can see that, It makes me feel like I have a place to come to it when I feel I am bad here in Derry. I am Nasrin Sheikh Mohammed. I am asylum seeker here from Syria.
I wonder what your first impressions were of this place, of Derry.
The first time when I came to Derry, I was feel like I am stranger here. Like, I don't know anyone here. I don't have a friend, family. I am a Muslim woman. But every time I walk in the streets, people say hello to me and they say, you are very welcome. There's police, there's government. They will give you your rights and they will help you.
My name is Imon. I'm originally from Myanmar, which used to be called Burma in the past. Currently in my home country, there is a civil war. Your life is at risk at any time. There is a military coup. You can be detained at any time for no reason. So when I'm safe here, it means that I can speak what I think is right. If I walk alone down the street, I'm not living in a constant fear that somebody will attack me.
I'm always in awe of people who are thrust into a new culture, a new country, and learn another language and adapt. What if that was me?
Yeah.
What if that was my family?
Everybody who manages to arrive to a safe place, that means they are the bravest, the smartest, the ones who have the most resilience as well.
Mary, you've also been at the receiving end of online hate and discrimination. I just wonder how you cope with that.
I'm immune to it because since I came to this country, I've been experiencing it. It didn't start when I was in the public eye, but I actually don't read them. I don't think they deserve any minute of my time. We need government to step up with legislation on social media. We don't deserve it because we are good citizens and we want to support, build the community, be part of it and contribute fully to all aspects of our life. The silent majority need to start talking because we have so many people in this country who really want to see a completely new island. And that's why we are here, to continue building that.
You're listening to The County Measure and we're in Derry.
Hi. I'm Soak, and the piece you're about to hear is called Teenage Dreams So Hard to Beat. That's probably familiar, and that's because I named it after a line in the song Teenage Kicks by The Undertones. When I was 17 or 18, a huge light festival came to Derry, and suddenly there was quotes lit up on tops of buildings and sculptures with beautiful glowing hearts in them. And at the time, I think I was trying to find every reason I could to leave Derry. I think, like most people that age, I was ready to see something else. But I remember there was a sign just beside the Guildhall that said, "Teenage dreams so hard to beat." And I remember it really stopped me in my tracks and made me look around at where I was and admire the city. And now I'm 28. I can't get enough of Derry, to be honest. I go back at every opportunity. Like flames above the cold call centre, a sign screams, "Teenage dreams so hard to beat." Its brave bright bulbs blink so big, they reach their arms to me. When we hold hands, the city glows, like asteroids burning blue overhead. I can see everything at once, my whole entire life, in Derry's wings full spread. I can see the first day I arrived, I made instant friends with Jack next door, cause he had an inflatable Spider-Man, asthma, and his laugh would cut you to the core. I was 7, short and stubborn, but my imagination was good. They said I might never read or write, but I was determined I would. And it was outside that rusty reading centre where I met Mog in an old tire. Over the years we had Sumo, Cosmo, Daisy, Tootsie and Rocky sleeping by the fire. But we never named the stick insects, cause well, we couldn't tell them apart. That's where my ma drew the line, and she set them free in St. Collins Park. I grew up lucky, grew up with friends I couldn't tell you the things I have for, all our wonderful moronic adventures, all our comebacks and closer calls. They put batteries in my chest, taught me morals and curse words. They were there for me no matter what time or day or month or cause. So I count down December from January 1st when everyone's back together. Our plastic pins on a paper world meet back in its center. Back home in Derry, beaming laps around the walls. Huddled with the smokers laughing ourselves stupid under the parasols. Where rain is a silk dress, perfecting pirouettes across the foil. Now I realize, me and my friends, we never left after all.
Here on the Diamond in Coleraine, looking at a fine bronze likeness of Bertie Peacock, gentleman, sportsman, MBE, it says, who in 1983 started a youth soccer movement, this Super Cup Northern Ireland, and the town here, banner is all over the place for Super Cup NI 2024, more than just a game. It brings kids from all over the world. This year I know there are teams arriving for the first time from Japan, New Zealand, Mexico, teams from all around Derry and all around the six counties of Northern Ireland. Youth teams, senior teams, girls, boys. Brings about 70,000 visitors to Derry and they're so proud of it here. It's a really big thing and we're just about to go off to Anderson Park to meet Martin Smith and the senior Derry team before they play a team from Connecticut in the US.
Martin, great to meet you.
What an amazing thing this is, this tournament.
It's great. It's great for the young lads. We all come from separate football clubs all around the county. They all come together as a one team to play in the tournament. So we actually won it last year.
Brilliant.
Won the whole thing. So
you must have been thrilled.
Yeah, it's brilliant. So we're playing a team from America tonight.
Connecticut.
Connecticut, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we're looking forward to that.
What does this tournament mean to you? I mean, looking at the other, these banners all over the place saying it's more than a game of football, you know, it's where you make memories for life. And I guess all of you coming, mostly coming from different clubs, you're meeting maybe the first time, and it must be pretty significant.
It is a good experience. You know, you make friends for life here, memories last a lifetime, and it is a lot more than football. It's very emotional here. I mean, first game we lost here against Brighton 2-1, hard fought game, but we bounced back and we're here again today. I'm Odrin Patton and I play for Anstruther FC.
Just can't beat it, it's just a week away, all your mates, you know, playing football. Just love it, you know, can't beat it. I'm Luke Hall and I play for Balmain United.
So I'm just wondering, you know, looking forward past this tournament, the next few years, finishing school, are any of you maybe hoping to go into football to become professional players?
Yeah, I'd like to go on as not a footballer, maybe a physio, where I want to work in a backroom staff, something to do with football, because I love football and it's always been my dream.
Yeah, it's a dream to hopefully go across to England one day and hopefully next year.
Matthew Burns and I play for Corain.
Who would you like to play for?
I think I'd take anybody.
How you doing?
Oh, good, yourself.
Vincent Woods, how are you?
Leslie O'Connor, nice
Leslie,
to meet you.
Leslie, good to meet you.
Jesus, it's a bad job. I get interviewed and I'm only standing here watching them warming up.
Tell me your story.
No, my story. You don't have enough time or airtime for my story. Let me tell you. I'm from Derry, originally. Went out to California to play soccer in college a long time ago. Now my kid's playing, so he's over here. He came over last year, played with these boys, which was fun for him, you know. So he had an opportunity to team up with them again this year.
So he's with the Connecticut team?
Yes, he is. Yeah.
Great.
I went to university in England when I was left school from here, and a fella saw me play. I was playing and asked me to go to America to play. Packed my suitcase and went 6 weeks later. Great. Never come home. 19 and played for 30 years out there. So
you've seen a lot of changes in this place since you left.
Oh, we didn't have these opportunities. Like, I remember when the Milk Cup first started, it was like 85, I think. It was just different. I mean, it was the troubles, wasn't it? You know what I mean? Like, I took the boys last week to watch Derry City play, and we were right in the middle of, you know, the bog side, and it's just, you know, it's just different. I remember watching Giggs play. I remember watching him play, and I was like, geez, that lad's fast. Man United were playing. I went in to watch them play. As fast as I could run, Giggs could run faster with the ball. And you know what I mean? It was just one of those where you're just watching that, and you're like, who's that whippet? And just the same kind of player. The ball just stuck to his foot like glue, and he just ran through boys like they were nice through butter, you know?
Great.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I'd say there are a few good ones here too.
Yeah.
This is great, and obviously all of you will hope to emerge from it and go on to play as you do, or to work in the game in whatever form. But I suppose realistically, not everybody does get to do that. And I wonder how you actually prepare yourselves for that possibility.
There's always the chance of just losing, getting a bad injury could happen, just ruin. So you have to be mentally prepared as well as physically for them downfalls, and just keep moving forward and keep pushing, try to get ready to become a professional.
Just play every game like it's your last game. You never know who's going to be watching you. It only takes one game to get scouted and stand out. Callum Leacock and play for Linfield.
Roy Carroll once told me, just go enjoy it, because at the end of the day, after 90 minutes, that's it. So just go enjoy your football.
And it's great to show the county and the country in a positive light. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of history here in this country. It's bringing a lot of different cultures together and showing the best that Northern Ireland has to offer.
Coming up on The County Measure, young farmers in Moneymore, Seamus Heaney's home place, new writing from Micheál McCann, and keeping a clear eye on queer Derry City. Here on Market Street in Limavady, the town with one of my favourite origin names, the whole area around here was the kingdom of the O'Cahons. And the legend is that in a battle between various of them, a dog belonging to one branch of the O'Cahons leaped across a river to go and get help and come to the rescue. So Léim Ó Wadaí, the leap of the dog, becomes Limavady. And it's one of my
favourite sources of a name. Really lovely, busy street, children playing, people in and out of shops. And of course, Limavady is also where Jane Ross collected the air that became known as the Londonderry air, or the Derry air, in the 1850s. And of course, that then became the song Danny Boy, or became the air of the song Danny Boy. And right beside where I'm standing, some very clever person has adapted that slightly for a bar which will remain unnamed, but a very clever slogan over the door which says, the pints are calling. They have the cooked ones as proof of how good they are. And who says that clever product placement doesn't work? But this with a difference. My eye is drawn to a plate of cooked floury potatoes outside a fruit and veg shop on Market Street.
The cooked version left out. And it's good, it's working.
Marshall Howe's greengrocers advertising their wares.
I couldn't resist the Queen's,
but I'll go for that.
But I saw the cooked ones.
Can't blame you. 7:30, please. Would you like a bag for those?
No, that's great.
We sell all of those in a minute.
Okay, that's a prize. Nothing like a new spud.
You're right.
Yeah.
It's James Howe here, and we're at Marshall Howe Greengrocers in Limavady. Marshall's my granddad, and my dad's running it at the minute, so third generation.
I love the touch of the queens, cooked queens, on the plate inside.
We actually have some people try to buy the cooked ones, or I've seen people sample it and actually taking a bite out of it.
They but look great, it's a lovely touch.
Kind three of generations, my granddad, my dad, then me and a brother are in it at the minute. Broccoli, cauliflower, beans, peas, all the carrots. Like some seasons, the guy that grows carrots would live 5 minutes away. It's as local as that there. Like even all those cooked stuff, that's all made just on site. We all make that our own stuff, and the meat we use in that there comes from a butcher, literally just across the road over there. So it's good stuff.
Great to see.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Like it.
Yeah.
In South Derry, Mid Ulster, not far from Marifelt, Tomb. It's really good land here. You can see it all around. And we're going to a town called Moneymore, which of course would come from Muine Mór in Irish, and going to meet some young farmers who are continuing that long tradition. Moneymore is actually a model village from the time of the Ulster plantation, so get an insight into what those now Ulster Scots settlers made in architecture, made in the shape of this place. And I think we'd probably get a little window of insight as well from our young farmers nearby who are part of the Moneymore Young Farmers Club.
Vincent, how are you
Welcome
doing?
Welcome to Jack. Moneymore.
Lovely to meet you. Anna.
Hello.
Vincent, great to meet you.
Anna Short is the secretary of the Moneymore Young Farmers Club. Jack Hunter is club leader.
You're right in the middle of Northern Ireland. Really, we are just at the foot of the Spearns and Slieve Galleon just.
Yeah, here's the mountain now coming into view. It's lovely. So you have a dairy farm, and I think your farm, your family farm, is mm-hmm. sheep farm.
Yeah, sheep.
I would be the fourth generation of hunters at Drumroth.
We live in Ballyfrilay House, which was the plantation house of this area. I'd be the third generation on our farm.
So we're just walking down along the Drumrot Road here. We're about half a mile outside Moneymoor, and then we're going down just to see a wee batch of calves. It's our heifer calves, so within the next year or so, they'll be getting in calve and then making their way into our dairy herd as well.
Anna, tell me a little bit about the Young Farmers Club of Moneymoor.
Well, this is our 63rd year now of the club, so we have about 80 or 90 members in the books, members of all ages from 12 up to 30, and they take part in all sorts of competitions, from arts festival to public speaking, stock judging. It is a really great organisation to be a part of.
Silage assessment, soil assessment, which is obviously developing really good skills related to farming. But then there's also opportunities for public speaking, choir festival, the arts festival, you know, drama festival.
Mental health is a big thing for farmers because we spend so much time by ourselves, like maybe in a tractor cab or just in the yard by yourself. So having something like arts festival, especially in the winter with the dark nights and stuff, is great to be able to meet up with 30 of your friends twice a week and do stuff like that. Like, it is great.
It is great fun. We do love it. Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about Moneymoor, the village just beside us here. And, you know, coming through, I was struck by the Union Jacks, by that fine banner of King William, by the image of King Charles. So, you know, clearly a strong unionist identity and proud of it.
The community relations in Moneymoor are brilliant across all sides of the community. You know, Moneymoor has a great loyal order, the Orange Order. We've got seven lodges in the district of Moneymoor, all with their own band. And it is something as a community I think we're really proud of, because there's so many unionist areas that maybe have their lodges are dying, bands are dying, but Moneymoor, it's staying really strong, which is great to see. And this year we hosted the 12th of July demonstrations in the village of Moneymoor. So, and I suppose it's just great that that community feel and people coming to Moneymoor. And
so a good 12th of July in Moneymoor.
Oh, it was brilliant. I'd recommend you come.
I might just be here next year for it.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And here they come, the calves. They think the visitors are bringing grub.
Yeah, they'll be expecting some meal, but they'll have to wait till later. They're mostly Holstein heifers, and then you'll notice that blue one there with quite a bit of white.
Yeah, beautiful.
It would have a little bit of shorthorn breeding in it as well. So a few years ago, we had a dairy shorthorn bull that we would have ran with our heifers.
You're two very young people, obviously determined to make your living in farming. Is it hard to look at making a sustainable living here?
I am a teacher as well. I'm a qualified teacher as well. And I farm part-time, mostly at the weekends. But I definitely think that, you know, if you have a passion for farming and a love for farming, you will absolutely be able to make a living in it.
To farm, you could be up in the middle of the night calving a cow or lambing a ewe, and you do have to want to do it.
And then in terms of sustainability, you know, would you have people looking at a bit of rewilding? Do you have anything like that on the horizon?
Well, I think farmers are very aware of their role within the environment, and they make every effort to make sure that there isn't silage effluent ending up in the river, to make sure that habitats aren't being harmed, to make sure hedgerows are being maintained, to make sure that there's wildlife areas.
That one bad farmer only is 1% of everybody else that is trying to do the best by their animals and trying to rear good calves and look after them. And like, it breaks your heart whenever something happens to one of your animals, but it's just sad whenever farmers aren't painted in that way. Like, farmers, we are feeding the country, and I think sometimes you're not given as much credit as you maybe deserve through like the government with their grant schemes and stuff. Like, yes, they do help to an extent, but there's certainly more that could be given to help.
It's so nice to meet you both.
You too.
Really lovely.
You too. Hopefully we've given you a little something about the amazing village of Moneymoor.
Definitely come back.
Oh, aye, surely.
My name is Micheál McCann. I'm a poet from Derry City and I now live in Belfast. I just published a book, Devotion, with Gallery Press. I think a lot about Derry, even though I don't live there anymore, as all people from Derry do. And I wrote this piece about going to pick up a small kitten from Derry. Keepsake. I do not think of the kitten as a souvenir as I drive to Derry to pick him up. The road there from Belfast is familiar and easy for me to autopilot. The motorway quickly becomes the Glensheane Pass, gold and clear today. For the hundreds of times I've crossed it, I find it beautiful. The patchy river that runs far below, the small waterways that fall down the mountain. I come down the road and soon reach a cattery on the outskirts of Derry. I obviously didn't choose this particular kitten because it was from Derry, but on the drive there, I think of the little trinkets I place beside my desk, courtesy of a particular friend, a hand-painted cat figurine from Mexico, a cream-pocked stone fashioned into a figure of a sheep. I feel close to her when I look at them. When I lay eyes on this little cream kitten, he wastes no time in abandoning the shadow of his mother. Home goes where you go, I've learned in the decades since I've left Derry. I always feel strange coming back, but it's nice that a place refuses stillness as much as we do. A place's brilliance and strangeness is sometimes most tangible when you look at it from a little distance. I don't feel like an alien though, and the kind Englishwoman in the doorway welcomes me. I watch the ranging kitten and I think I will call him Marcel. I love Proust, the great French writer, for his revelation that if a memory of something persists, it cannot be entirely lost. So maybe this kitten is a keepsake that will remind me of this moment, and this place, and all the moments that led to them. The Oxford English Dictionary describes souvenir as an instance of remembering, a slight trace or vestige of something. Nothing is lost forever, this little kitten makes me think, standing as we are in the outskirts of Derry City on this pale blue morning. Marcel is confident and outraged being confined in this fabric enclosure, and he makes his feelings known. As we drive home, by which I mean Belfast, which my mother flinches at each time I let that slip, the kitten breaks out of his carrier many times. We take breaks on hard shoulders and motorway slipways, where he scampers under the foot pedals. He looks at me with blue eyes as bright as ponds. I see myself reflected in his unflinching gaze. We sit a while in the Mahara park and ride. My understanding of home is always in flux.
You're listening to The County Measure and we're in Derry.
Just coming down into this sweep of landscape, this blue-brown valley coming over through the Glensheane Pass. And to South Derry and the very special landscape around Ballaghy, the home place, of course, of Seamus Heaney and the place in which he's remembered with such love and affection and where indeed he's laid to rest.
Marie McGuckin, great to meet you. Proud Ballaghy woman. And you work in the home place in the Seamus Heaney.
Yes, in Seamus Heaney home place, that's right. I'm one of the visitor guides.
And you have brought us to this very special landscape here at Loch Beg, which is part of this new initiative the last few years, this open ground where people encounter the poems in the setting.
Yes, we wanted to give visitors the opportunity to come out to the actual sites and places that Seamus is talking about and describing in his poems and to actually get the opportunity to listen to those poems in situ as well. And so when Seamus was a boy, his father Paddy, who was a cattle farmer, would have grazed his cattle out here. We're walking along our boardwalk. It takes you right through the grassland here. You can see the church island with the yew trees which surround the church and the graveyard out there.
Coming into the woodland now.
Yes.
Maybe just as well as this drop of rain.
I know, so we timed that perfectly. That well.
Marie, there are five places associated with Seamus's poetry, part of this open ground initiative. Where we are here, the Strand at Loch Beggart. What are the other four?
Okay, well, when we start our tour, we go to the Moyola River, down to where the old railway bridge is. That is very much associated with Seamus's childhood. We move on from there to the alleyways of Maherfelt, beside the bus station there. So he would have been coming home there to that bus station as a teenager from St. Columb's when he was boarding up there. We move on then to the eel fishery at Toom, moving on to when Seamus met Mary, his wife. Mary, who lived on the shores of the loch as well. And then we come here to the Strand at Loch Beg. And from here, our final stop is our Turfman sculpture, which is just outside Ballachibaun. And that spot is where the town celebrated Seamus's Nobel Prize win in 1995. I do remember my dad recalling Seamus calling in to my granny, because my granny was one of those ladies who used to, you know, stand out at the end of the path at the gate, seeing everything that was going on in the town and making sure she was up to speed with all the village gossip. Seamus loved all of that. He loved the village life and everything that was going on.
And your grandmother made sure she didn't miss anything.
I would say not. Knowing my granny, I would imagine there was nothing left untouched, I would say.
So we're here at the viewing point.
We're right up quite close to Loch Beg now. You can see really clearly across to the County Antrim side, across to Mony Glas. You can see all this lovely lush grassland.
And then there's a poem associated with here particularly.
The Strand at Loch Beg is the title of the poem as well. And the poem describes a cousin of his, a young man called Colin McCartney, who was sadly killed during the Troubles in 1975. Colin was shot and killed coming home from an All-Ireland football match down in Dublin.
It carries an extraordinary weight of, I suppose, political reality and then the near consolation of landscape and belonging. Here on the Strand at Loch Beg.
Yes, because I think what you get from the poem is that sadness, that loss, but also, as you say, the beauty of this place here and the memories, heartbreaking as well, when you listen to those last few lines.
Across that strand of yours, the cattle graze up to their bellies in an early mist. And now they turn their unbewildered gaze to where we work our way through squeaking sedge, drowning in dew. Like a dull blade with its edge honed bright, Loch Beg half shines under the haze. I turn because the sweeping of your feet has stopped behind me, to find you on your knees with blood and roadside muck in your hair and eyes. Then kneel in front of you in brimming grass and gather up cold handfuls of the dew to wash you, cousin. I dab you clean with moss, fine as the drizzle out of a low cloud. I lift you under the arms and lay you flat. With rushes that shoot green again, I plait green scapulars to wear over your shroud.
Here I live like a soul.
High up here on the walls of Derry, those iconic walls of siege and no surrender, and there was no doubting what direction we're looking in, because I'm staring straight at a very clear, large sign, white letters on black, Londonderry, West Bank, Loyalists still under siege, no surrender, and a big red hand of Ulster flag flying and a Union Jack not too far away, fluttering in the evening breeze. But behind that again is Newgate Arts and Culture Centre, and then right beside me is the Centre for Contemporary Art. So this city, you know, all these contradictions, all these fault lines, all these possibilities again for change. And we're going to meet somebody now in the Playhouse Theatre, again just beside me here, I suppose, who's at the centre of some of that search for change, that determination to make change, and that's the spoken word artist Mel Bradley.
It took me 12 more years before I realised that yes, I did actually indeed like girls. For the next 4 years, people just assumed that I was a lesbian. And I let them, but I harbored the dirty little secret that actually, I am one of the fence sitters. I am bisexual.
Mel Bradley, it's lovely to meet you here in the Playhouse. Yeah. It's a really, really nice space. Yeah. I can just imagine it full of people and you down there performing.
Born and raised here, I am a true Derry girl, through and through. This is very much like a very big cornerstone in my world. You know, as a young person going to the Derry Youth Theatre, as an adult then started writing and performing.
Tell me about the kind of work you do and what you write and what you like to present then in performance.
My practice as an artist is about telling the stories that often don't get told. The stories of women front and centre, of queer voices front and centre. And I love the word queer. For me, it was the word that did tell you who I sleep with. It's none of your business. It's nobody else's business. But it just says, I'm not straight. I'm very openly bisexual. Being bisexual is very, like, if you're with a woman, people assume you're a lesbian. And people did assume for a long time. And I let them. You're the worst lesbian in the world. I had two friends, separate friend groups, that used to say that to me. They'd be like, that's because I'm not. That's because I'm not. I'm bisexual. That's the way I am, you know?
I like that kind of the spirit that seems to be quite Derry, really, you know, of, you know, yeah. I will be
yes,
what I am.
Exactly. Yeah. You won't tell me what I'll be. Yeah. I will be it, yeah. I think that's what, you know, Derry is a very queer city. I don't mean that in the homosexual or gay or that sort of sense. I mean in the sense of other. We have our own rules. We have such a beautiful community of artists that just get up, get together and make stuff happen.
Does Derry, does the place itself continue to inspire you?
It does. I love it whenever you sit down and listen. I'm originally from a very unionist background, and my father was in the RUC, so, you know, in the RUC.
The
Royal Ulster Constabulary. Yes. So, policeman's daughter living in the Brandywell. And I was there for a year. I didn't really interact with anybody. And this one night in July, I got this knock on the door. And it was my next door neighbour, and she said, you've been here for a year and you've never had a drink with us. Now you go up those stairs, you put on some clothes and you come down. And it was the women from the square, and we sat down and we shared our stories that night. And up until that point, I knew what my experiences of the Troubles were. And these women then sharing their experiences of stop and search, of house raids, of all of those things. Like, I remember my dad checking the car in the morning before he got into it or before we got into it. But then hearing their stories. And then up until that point, for me, Bloody Sunday, all I knew was that they were terrorists. To then hear them saying they were our brothers, they were our sisters, they were our family. These were people who were like wanted peace. It's shaped so much of my thinking as an artist that if we sit down and listen to each other and humanize the stories, as long as you see the human element, when you remove the human element, that's when things get horrible. To be seen and heard.
And that goes out into Derry and way beyond it too.
Yes.
And yeah, I guess that is what art does. It, yeah, finds its way, and somebody will be changed maybe, and certainly bolstered or given another way of seeing.
I always hold on to William S. Burroughs. Artists are the architects of change.
After being in several relationships, I finally met a man that I fell in love with. I spent the first year of the relationship marveling at the fact that he was a man, and I kind of liked it. And then I realised, I'm not in a straight relationship. If anything, he is in a very queer one. I stopped asking myself, was I? And declared myself queer enough.
One of the joys of a new place is the chance to wander and get lost. Here in Derry City, I've taken an almost hidden path along the north bank of the Foyle, away from the city and through lovely old parkland, to find myself standing here looking up at the great high span of the Foyle Bridge that carries traffic in and out of the city, the longest bridge in Ireland. People above me travelling to Belfast, Dublin, Donegal, and to all corners of this county. And it's an apt image somehow for the drive and go of this city and county, with its remarkable spirit of endurance, openness, hospitality and humour. The spirit of the sea god Manannán Mac Liar is said to dwell close to here, guarding the entrance to Loch Foyle. There's an abundance of power here for sure, and the will to harness it to the future. I think of the epitaph on Seamus Heaney's gravestone in Ballaghy. Walk on air against your better judgment. And so we do here, walk in the Derry and the London Derry air.